Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Happy birthday, America. Yes, indeed, as we celebrate our independence today, as we celebrate our birth as a nation, a day that kickstarted a revolution to gain our sovereignty. Let's admit that this last year's trip around the sun was also another head-scratcher. But let's also remember that we are babies. You know, as a country, we're basically going through puberty in comparison to other countries' timelines. And we're going to go through growing pains. We are going through growing pains. This is not an excuse to say this. It's just a reality. And this is good because we got to keep learning. We got to keep maturing. We got to keep striving. We got to keep climbing. We got to keep building. And we got to make sure we maintain hope along the way as we continue to evolve. Why? Because it's who we are. Why? Because the alternative sucks. I believe that America and you and I believe we're an aspiration. All right? We're constantly in motion. We're on the way, trying to get wiser, trying to get braver, trying to dream more, trying to do more, trying to be more fair, take the right kind of responsibilities to gain the right kind of freedoms. And we got to keep realizing that we're a place where our individual pursuits and desires need to be appreciative and supportive of our collective responsibilities as Americans, hence the United States of America. Sure, we're each unique, we're each independent. We each have innate abilities that others don't have as people and as states, but at the same time, we are all in this together. And if you don't purchase that, move on, go somewhere else.
Where?
So, as we celebrate the red, white, and blue this weekend, let's be sure and just reflect for a minute. Take a little bit of inventory on where we've come from, where we are, and how and where we wanna go from here. On the way to being the best we can be. Now, what if that was a song that each of us just said, I can't not sing that song.
Wait, sing the song so we can sing it.
A little bit better.
Sing
you want to be a little
how
bit
does it
better.
Go?
We'll sing
on
it, we'll
the
sing
way
it.
To being the best we can be. Let's make that a song we can't not sing.
Wait.
Why?
We're on the way to be the best that we can be. Make that a song that we just have to sing.
You can't.
Let's rock America. Happy birthday.
I mean, I think.
Let's rock America.
To the best America. Country ever.
Let's rock America. All right.
We'll
there's
get
lots of comp.
Together. Probably not. Because we get so many guns, guns, guns.
Oh, guns, 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 guns.
This brings up a lot of different things.
I mean, it's funny. Matthew McConaughey seems to be doing the thing that a lot of people love to do, which is transpose advice that's broadly good for individual human beings to a nation, where it's like, yeah, people, sure, go through growing pains. You know, the younger you are, the more dumb and even cruel things you're going to do. And that doesn't necessarily make you a bad person because life is a growing experience. That's less meaningful when you're not talking about like just like a person and you're talking about a country with the power to end all of life on Earth with the press of a button and the power to make the planet uninhabitable for the human species over the course of decades via an economic system that it largely drives on a global scale.
It's not really applicable. It's not. It's naive. Mm-hmm. Also, Matthew, you don't want to be governor. You want to be a TED talker.
You want to
make big philosophical. You don't know anything about how to achieve what you're just talking about because
I enjoyed the camera. Well,
also, like for example, or leave. He says, or leave. Where would we leave?
Yeah, where would you go?
What are
Matthew?
You talking about?
Well, right. That's also like that's not so
what?
Much going on here. If you don't like your like what's going on. In your country and what I say about your country, you should get out of here. It's not like a winning statement, I guess, from a politician. He seems like this is clearly he's a desired politician now. What if I disagree with him and I don't want to leave? But also like it's fascinating to me because it is a whole lot of words that say nothing.
Yeah.
Because what he's talking about. And like, I broadly am like, he's right that we are like a puberty country, Yes. It's a
we're younger than a lot of countries. We're older than Germany. Which both is currently a broadly more reasonable place than us. But also, if we're talking about growing pains, they had some pretty bad growing pains.
Real awful growing pains, yeah. Kind of affected like the entire household.
Like to
avoid if we're going
to
go
Germany
through
style growing pains.
But also,
I guess you could say slavery was our growing. I don't know. Again, I mean, it doesn't make any sense because people aren't countries.
Well, I just think he's really relying on his Oscar. In this speech, like you could see him pulling out his actor tricks of like, I'm gonna deliver.
Look, he's a very good actor. He's an inherently charismatic guy. It's hard not to like him when he does pretty much anything because he's Matthew McConaughey. It's his job to be liked.
You guys, visually though, the like zoomed in camera angle, the talking with
Great. Like the only thing that would make it better is if he was eating fast food in his car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or drinking some bourbon.
Yeah. So my main issue is that what did he say, which is nothing. And
he talked about timelines.
It's fine. It's alternate timelines. But what he's doing is he's a very skilled politician already. Good job.
That's
Matthew.
What I was gonna say.
Because he's saying like, you know, oh yeah, what a wild year it was. You know, really real head scratcher. You know, we're going through growing pains. We're going through this. We're going through that. We got to come together. He never said what those growing pains were.
Yeah.
What he thinks about them, what he thinks are the problem with them, what he wants to do about it, or what the collective action is. It's just these sort of like lofty, like, I like the idea of America is this. Okay, what happened last year? What was the problem with it? What are the pains going on? What are the fights about?
Yeah.
What is your opinion on them? He's just sort of playing to the we got to unite.
So what you're saying,
but it's also
is no notes,
but like better than
no notes, perfect.
but like better than Greg Abbott.
Well, it's interesting because he's doing this. He's walking the line right now, which is that he's saying like, you know, we're all individuals. We got these. You know, it's an individual nation, but also we have collective responsibility, and that's gonna like make a lot of like conservative heads explode. Like,
yeah,
everyone's very excited about Matthew McConaughey running. They're like, yeah, like finally we got like a guy. But once he says we have a collective responsibility, that's Marxism to them. That's commie shit. Although again, he didn't say explicitly what it was.
Is that the response that people are giving?
I didn't look at the response because I was just, Sophie just shared this video and I was like, that's fun. So I don't know the response, but I know that that's the response when anyone talks about any sort of collective responsibility or action. That's commie stuff. America is about the individual and freedom, in the marketplace of individuality and freedom. It's, you know, we'll see how well he toes that line. We'll see what he means when he actually says anything.
About Matthew McConaughey getting into politics, which it looks like he's going for, is that
absolutely
like,
that American flag in the background? Come on,
oh yeah,
as completely meaningless as everything in that video was. He would be objectively the best governor we've had. I don't know, since like Ann Richards, like
bummer,
Texas
right?
politics
I mean,
is
too,
such
right?
a fucking disaster, and our last handful of governors have been such unrepentant, violent sociopaths. But like, yeah, fuck Matthew McConaughey.
Get him in there. Have him talk about freedom and opportunity.
You know what he probably won't do is encourage Texans to kill people they disagree with. I don't think he'll do that.
That's true. That's actually
and that's
true.
That's something. That's something.
Matthew McConaughey will enthusiastically urge murder.
That was fun.
Old business. I have something to bring up as well that I think is important.
Reach.
I have a couple of things. One thing is I found the WikiFeet page for Ava Braun, Hitler's long-term girlfriend and eventual wife.
Of course you did.
They found a bunch
of course it exists, and of course you looked for it.
It's incredible because the photos they've picked are like they're from videos. I think they're colorized videos. I don't think they were originally shot in color, but like vacation videos that she took, like at a beach and stuff. And they're so normal. They look like they. I mean, other than the fact that the resolution's a little off, they could have been filmed by like any woman, any white lady in her 20s today. Like every lady listening.
Oh
to
yeah,
this
these
has
are Instagram
videos.
Photos.
Can't.
Yeah, these are they're again a little blurry.
Believe this.
Isn't it amazing?
I can't believe this.
Three out of five stars.
They did find some clear shots of her feet.
You sick fucks. All of you sick fucks.
So funny.
Are you just like, fucking masturbating to her
fucking she spent the early 40s fucking a man who is responsible for 70-something million deaths.
But she and sure is flexible.
Kudos on to the 23 people like, who voted ugly on
three stars. Three
everybody
stars.
Listening.
I would masturbate to her feet, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Everybody,
okay, yeah.
Everybody listening to this in your cars, pull over, Google her wiki feet. Wild.
It's incredible. It's
this is an audio medium,
amazing.
But I think that this transcends.
Once again, Katie is ranked higher on wiki feet. So
yes, Katie has a higher ranking on wiki feet. Than the lady who literally fucked Hitler.
That's right.
What? This is an honor. You've turned my day right around.
We're not worthy.
I do want to read out, because there's 87 total votes from incredible human beings who decided Ava Brown has a WikiFeet page and I must vote upon it. 22 said beautiful. 12 said nice. 24 said okay. 6 said bad, and 23 said ugly. And I have to say, I think those people are voting her feet ugly just because she fucked Hitler, because her feet are fine.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, her feet
I
are fine.
I think the median one is very reasonable, especially given the blurriness of the photos, but I think people are being unfair to her feet just because she had sex with the man who orchestrated the Holocaust.
I think people are unfair to her feet because feet are ugly in general.
Yes, there's a lot of things wrong with this. But,
like,
yeah.
Judge her by her rotten soul, not by her bunions, you creeps.
Yeah, don't blame her soul on her souls.
Yeah, oh, wow. We really found it. Wow. Man, we're 12 minutes into this episode, and we
easily
are
our best episode ever. Yeah. I have one last piece of business to bring
up. One addendum to this, just because I'm reading the user comments. One person, really honest, just says, hard to rate. All right.
That person is the Walter Cronkite of our era. Delving into the Eva Brown wiki feet controversy and saying, this is a tough one, guys.
It's a real hard one.
Real head scratcher person, here.
Nice color shot of her toes. Wonder if AH was into showing them some TLC.
I don't wonder that, but it takes all kinds.
One
of the comments is just
the
all
most
caps.
Psychopathic thing. That's Texas governor level of psychopath.
Yeah. follow up. Maybe you'll that. All caps. OMG. Ava has a page here. Cupid heart. Cupid heart. Cupid heart.
Oh my god.
No.
What an amazing species.
But my favorite is just hard to rate. Really, matter of fact.
Yes.
Just
hard
like,
to
no,
rate is extremely funny. Thank you for that addendum.
Honorable.
Robert, what
honorable.
Was your other update? We're now
this is
14
more of a
minutes
theory
into the show.
About a way that we could improve society. So I think we should be talking about these things too. So I was having a conversation with my partner recently. We were talking about bathrooms, particularly the fact that some men's rooms and like shitty bars in particular have like a trough instead of a single urinal, right? She was like, okay. Why don't we just have a trough around the outside of a bar so that everyone can pee while they're drinking and not waste time what that could be spent drinking? And this evolved into a discussion of a way to reform society so that everyone is always wearing a hose system around their groin. Mm. And there's just a series of holes built into the world around us that you plug the hose into and it sucks all of the urine out. And that could be, we could rebuild society around that. And people could have just like, just,
like catheters? You mean
yeah,
kind like
of,
we all
like,
wear
like
a catheter?
Like a big industrial, like a 6-inch wide gauge hose.
With
like a telescoping
public,
tube hose. Yeah.
Yeah, public dump spots, much like...
Yeah, like built into banks and
much
stores.
Much like our electric charging stations.
Yeah, like an electric charging station.
Okay,
but in
I'm
order
on board.
To get
but
rid
in
of
reverse,
urine.
Right?
Yeah.
I will say that part of the joy of a bathroom experience for me when I go out... is to escape the people I'm with for a couple minutes.
Yes.
But you could just say, I'm going to go find a hole to plug the tube.
You
got to
go find a piss hole,
I got to go find a tube hole.
Can I just say, sounds smelly.
Can
yeah, I mean,
well,
it'll be a urine-covered world.
That just
world,
says you don't have a lot of faith in our ability
can
to,
we somehow,
you know, build solid infrastructure around the country that's clean and efficient
as a matter of fact, Cody, yes.
I think my only addition to this proposal would be to add a feature to your car
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
like an emergency fuel system somehow.
Yeah.
If we can we
could make
urine-filled
cars. We could make, I mean, theoretically, hydroelectric power is, there's a lot of potential that's untapped. Couldn't we power our cities with urine?
You guys
why
have no
not?
Idea yes. how much
Tell
I
me
pee.
Why not. Yeah, I mean, I think we could, Katie.
Katie,
I think I think you could run.
Yeah, actually,
like
you
a
guys
Sparrow.
Have an idea.
Yeah,
But you just have an idea. You don't really know. So
I'm bringing this up because we're talking about climate change, and I think this could be one of the solutions. And also, there's so many new fashion implications. If everyone always has a giant hose wrapped around their legs for what that they can like unplug, you know. It's good times.
Look, it could get messy. I'm not sure it's the chicest choice, but
can I just say that people don't wash their hands enough already?
Yeah, but you wouldn't have to wash your hands if you're just plugging a hose into a hole.
That just yes, but you're
that's sterile. So
you wash your hands after you get dressed every morning because you have to like deal. You're dealing with the tubes and stuff.
Oh no, you never take the tube off, Cody.
Yeah,
you never take the tube off.
Oh no, is it like an implant thing or is it just like it's such a comfortable garment?
It's so comfortable.
You don't want to take.
You wouldn't want to take it off. Yeah. Why would you? Why would you?
We're gonna start having pants with a third tiny leg for your hose.
A tiny leg for the hose.
We almost have to take an ad break. We haven't talked about news.
We haven't talked about the news at all.
But we are going to, you know, we talked about climate change a lot last week. And you know what? I have a feeling that we're going to start talking about climate change a lot of weeks. And I'm fine with that. If this becomes a climate change focused podcast, I'll be fine with that because it's really fucking important.
Yeah. And we can fix all of our problems.
With hose.
With pee tubes, yes. All right. Mm-hmm. Speaking of large amounts of urine, Joe Biden's popularity is at lower than its high water mark, but maybe not.
It's in the
toilet. We're
going
to talk about polling right now.
Is it in the toilet?
Now.
Is it
no, toilet? No, it actually
isn't. It's not
isn't.
In the toilet.
Yeah,
it's pretty partisan.
It's pretty partisan. That said, most sources, it's not really changed much since he took office. There's been, so we wanted to kind of analyze. You know, we have our own bubble here, and the three of us disagree on things, but we're all pretty much in accordance that Joe Biden, but it's useful to kind of like, okay, but how do regular people like how does like the just folks
yeah what's normies like, what's normies
yeah,
thinking
yeah what is in general how is he doing in the eyes of people and it seems like broadly speaking, fine. I found some analyses of like the most recent dozen or so presidents, and he's kind of in the middle of the pack. He's doing better than like four recent presidents were, and worse than eight or nine recent presidents were. Which is like, yeah, again, and again, when I say recent, we're still talking about guys like 30, 40 years ago. So obviously, like, it was easier
relatively
for them to get higher highs.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the 166-day point in their presidencies, he's beating Donald Trump, Gerald Ford, Bill Clinton, and by a narrow margin, George W. Bush, which is meaningful because two of those were one-term presidents and two of those were two-term presidents. The other nine polling-era presidents are all beating him. But what's interesting
is... how would they have done if they'd been around with Twitter?
Yeah, because this particular analysis I found was on Bloomberg. Other people have reported on this same basic idea, but... every previous president besides Trump either started their presidency above 60% approval or had spiked to that point, to that level at some point by now. And they all had a much larger range of variance in the polls than we've seen. Like Ronald Reagan, by this point in his presidency, had experienced a 17% jump in popularity and a 10% drop. And Biden hasn't experienced anything close to either of those.
When we talk about this, I think it's important. I mean, just the nature of the world is so different and our country. And I increasingly don't see how we break out of this pretty consistent divide statistically
this head
of how we are.
This head scratcher of a year.
Yeah, this head scratcher of a year.
Yeah,
it's
real.
Just we're so entrenched. We're so entrenched in our.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the
ideologies.
Big lessons. There was this. Democrats would talk a lot about like if before the election, like if Biden gets in, you know, we're going to have this big blue wave and it's going to lead to this era of good feelings where Americans, because Trump was so bad, everyone's so going to be so grateful to have an adult back in office. And it's going to be like the swinging 90s again or whatever. I don't know. Like, it's going to be another, or the 50, whatever. It's going to be like Americans are all going to get back on the same page. And obviously that was never, it had never any chance of happening. But I think part of why, I don't think we'll never see a sea shift in politics. I don't think we're stuck at this kind of like 52, 46 or whatever kind of divide. It's actually more like 51, 52 to like 41, 42. Like that's kind of where 538 has the aggregate of all the polls right now. Biden, 51, 52 support, 41, 42% against, which has changed, has narrowed somewhat against Biden's favor since he took office, but also has narrowed by a small enough margin that it could be within the margin of error. Like, it's possible his sure. literally there's been no change and it's just like polling funkiness. But you know what has changed a lot in a positive way?
Raytheon's internal documents on critical race theory.
Raytheon has spent a lot of time thinking about critical race theory, Katie, because here's the thing about Raytheon. They care. They care about making sure their employees feel valued, and they care about making sure that they get the maximum blast radius out of a 2.4-kilogram hexogen charge when it detonates in the middle of a Yemeni school bus. Raytheon just cares, and that's what makes them so exceptional.
So that they can help defund the police.
Yep. Yeah.
Raytheon. What? Defund the police? Because every money that goes towards a cop isn't going to one of our new hexogen-powered hellfire missiles.
Defund the police, increase the military. That's their stance. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
We're back. Yeah, I want to finish talking about polling before we move on, because I'm just trying to get a handle on things. So, one of the things that's kind of interesting about, or like broadly speaking, a significant majority of Americans think he's done a pretty good job on the coronavirus. Like, looks like to be around like in the 60-ish percent range, and even a sizable chunk, like a third of Republicans agree with that.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting about that to me is that his actual support among Republicans is much lower. It's about 8%, which does say that like about a third of Republicans are, and when I say this, I'm not saying that Biden has actually done a particularly good job on the coronavirus. I'm not saying, like, that's not the point I'm making. It does suggest that a decent chunk of Republicans are willing to be, haven't drank the whole Democrats are literally communists trying to murder us Kool-Aid, which I found optimistic, but is also pessimistic because it shows that I don't know, a lot more Republicans maybe can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, but it's not good.
It's not good. It's complex because there are, I don't know how many of the Republicans who don't support his coronavirus handling actually have reasonable cases against, because there's very reasonable criticisms of his handling of coronavirus, including opening schools too early, like lack of caution about variants. Like, there's a bunch of things you can go after him on. So I don't know how many Republicans are like, well, I don't approve of his handling of the coronavirus because of these very real flaws with it, as opposed to how many, I don't approve of his handling of the coronavirus because he's trying to put chips in my children so that Bill Gates can.
Yeah, because it's fake and there, yeah, he helps. Yeah. He invented it with China to get Fauci a bunch of money or something.
So that does kind of make it difficult to take more of a lesson out of that. Yes, Katie?
Yeah. No, I don't have much to add. I was debating whether adding that it is problematic, this divide right now, in terms of our vaccinations. You know, we're not fully vaccinating. About half of the country is not.
Yeah.
A percentage of that plans to, at some point, but a large chunk of that are not going to. And we don't need to talk about the Delta variant, but it
what about the Lambda variant?
Yeah.
Any variant, but it's hard. It's tricky.
I'm trying. It's this weird mix of trying not to like fearmonger about the variants, because by God, at this point, freaking out about them isn't going to help anybody. But also, like, I don't know what nobody really does. Like, because viruses can mutate in a variety of ways. So it is scary that they're continuing to mutate and that we won't get a handle on it. That
because people won't get vaccinated. You know, I think that the majority of our listeners are fully vaccinated at this point. I think you don't have to be afraid for your own life. There are lots of cases of people getting it, even though they're vaccinated, but they get it mildly. Not lots, but I've heard anecdotally of several just from friends.
It's still happening.
But they don't get it hard. But the thing that the missing piece is you're probably not spreading it widely if you are vaccinated and you get it and you don't know, but it's potential. And the people that are most affected, of course, are those that are unvaccinated. But also, let's think about our hospitals, especially in regions where there's such a high percentage of people that are unvaccinated. This is a continuing nightmare that then goes on to affect everybody else's access to healthcare. So small tangent for me to say, as everybody's weighing their own personal decisions in your own communities about whether to wear masks. Okay, sorry.
Yep. And it's like, you know, I don't know what to say about like so much of our polarization problem is this, the shit we were talking about last time, right? It's in a lot of ways our most fundamental failure of infrastructure. The worst infrastructure problem we have isn't bridges, it isn't power, it isn't electricity. It's failures of mental infrastructure. It's failures to adequately educate people to make good decisions to avoid being influenced by fucking con men and grifters, and it's failures to prepare people to make the kind of decisions that citizens in a democratic society need to be able to make with a reasonable amount of competence if we're going to continue to have a democratic society that doesn't slide into authoritarianism. And the vaccine issue should be the least controversial thing. Like in a healthy, unhealthy democracy, we would all be on the same page about vaccines. We'd be screaming at each other about the gold standard or Benghazi or whatever. But we're not even as healthy as we were during 2012 when we were screaming at each other over Benghazi and whether or not Barack Obama had a valid birth certificate, which doesn't bode well. But I don't know. I don't want to lay in on that too much in terms of other things that we're not polarized about. Vast majority of Americans, about as strong a majority as approve of Biden's handling of the coronavirus, disapprove of his handling of the border. And that does seem to be for very split reasons, right?
Yeah. Across the board, the border is bad for Biden. Ooh. Okay, got there.
Border pad, Biden better.
Yeah.
Build.
You know who can't grow across the border? A lot of desperate people. Anyway.
So yeah, for different reasons.
There's a lot of same. I don't know if you're going to get to this. There's a poll about the views of Americans' views on crime.
Yeah.
The quote rise of crime. I feel like we'll talk about this more in depth in the future. But one I found interesting is that Americans seeing crime as a very serious problem in America is at an all time is like a 20-year high. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that crime is at a 20-year high. It's sure not. But the perception, the view is that the concern is there, and maybe the media has something to do with that, and they're reporting over the past, even just the past few weeks, fueling it. Who knows? But I found this interesting because along with the poll was this little bit of information. 75% say that violent crime would be reduced by increasing funding to build economic opportunities in poor communities.
Now, see, that's good news because
that's
it
news.
Would be.
Very good news. And even 65% say the same about using social workers to help police defuse situations with people having emotional problems.
Again, we get to this. This is kind of a similar issue with guns, where if you actually look at a lot of the policies that would help, people don't disagree about. But when it comes to the way the issue is framed, yes, they do. Because when it comes to the way this issue is framed, it's not crime has risen. People are very concerned about it and they support economic remedies and more social workers in communities. It's crime has risen. Let's give the cops more guns.
Right.
Like, because the people who are framing it that way in the media are the people who have got everyone scared, even though while there's things to be concerned about, anytime you see violent crime rises the way it has in a lot of, of course, it's reasonable for people to be concerned. Not as concerned as they are because the rise is not as bad as people think it is, because media has overhyped this to be some sort of gigantic 70s-style crime wave when it's not. It's just not.
Oh, but did you see the viral video of the Target trash bag person?
Yeah,
thief?
People stealing from Targets.
Yeah, see that?
Yeah.
Come on. People want... the easy thing of treating the symptom, not the disease.
Yeah.
It's not easy. You're not treating the symptom by giving money to the police, but they think it. Yeah. You've been indoctrinated to think that that's the solution, and you're thinking about the fact that that doesn't solve shit and that the problems are getting worse because we're not doing anything about the problems.
And a lot of media wants that to be, wants cops to be the solution because the extent of their research on it is, oh, crime is risen. Let's go on a ride along with a cop and film it. Because that'll make good footage.
Yeah, same reason they just print any police statement as like fact, more or less. They're just stenographers for the police.
Look, we talk a lot about how much a problem it is that like there's no shared concept of reality, but like most people absolutely should hate the press because nationwide they're not good at their job. Comprehensively failed. And
nationwide they're not on our side.
No.
It's great.
Reason this poll got on my radar is because if you see it, Ted Cruz quote tweeted the post from ABC News, and his little comment was, "Oh, but sure, we gotta defund the police," because the first tweet is just in: the number of Americans seeing crime is an extremely serious problem in the United States, is at more than 20-year high. Joe Biden is underwater in trust to handle it, according to new poll. That's the tweet. There's no context about, like, by the way, it's not, like, the crime isn't a 20-year high or anything like that. It's just the people. That's the first tweet. The follow-up tweet was about how 75% think that we should actually, like, just, like, increase funding in communities, in poor communities, and have social workers deal with a lot of these problems. So the framing of this by the media allows weasels like Ted Cruz to quote tweet this thing and say, see, but the Democrats want to defund the police, even though the follow up tweet literally has those measures as being extremely popular.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just like frustratingly agreeing with you. They suck. They're awful.
Yeah, they're terrible.
They're terrible at this.
And part of it is
on purpose. Like,
they've always been terrible. And this is like the complexity when we talk about like the issue of the death of truth. When I talk about the death of truth, I'm not talking about the death of objective truth. That has remained unchanged. I'm talking about the death of a widely agreed upon standard of truth, which doesn't mean people still didn't buy into bullshit. It's just more people bought into the same bullshit, because you can read a lot about, for example, the ways in which the CIA would manufacture consent for U.S. interventions in Latin America. The ways that, like, during all the press who were trying to cover the invasion of Panama and just went with the military, and the military didn't let them into the country and made up reasons for there to be delays. So they got in there late and they didn't get to see any of the war crimes, and almost nobody realized what had gone on. And, you know, like, or how, you know, we would, when we overthrew the government of Guatemala, they were just, you know, they had the CIA operative guys like Dulles had their pet journalists who they reached out to write the stories that made it look like, no, this is a victory in the cause of liberty. And most Americans are like, yeah, sure, whatever. That's still a problem. It was a problem that, like, people bought into lies then. And to an extent, the fracturing of the concept of truth is because more people have a realistic understanding of what is actually happening. But it's still a problem that our conception of reality is so divergent. And that's kind of a lot to hold in your head, right? Both that it's a problem that truth is fractured, and that when truth was more unified, it made it very easy for our government to get people on board with horrific things. Both of those things are true at once.
Yeah.
And I don't have like a simple solution to how to, what, yeah, like it's not a simple issue. It's not as easy as if we just had another Walter Cronkite. Because Walter Cronkite was the engine of a fair amount of disinformation himself.
Exactly.
We've never done it good.
No, it's never been good. Like, it's the same thing about, like, when we talk about good governance. That's not a thing that's existed. You have had some countries, and you still have some countries in Europe, who were very successful at extracting enough wealth out of the rest of the world and continue to be successful enough at that they provide well to the people who live within their borders, like Canada. reasonably good at that compared to the United States, but you don't have good governance, because I would argue good governance means not exploiting huge numbers of people. But
I would accept that argument.
And yet,
anyway, that's
speaking
what I have
of
to
exploiting
say about
yeah. many people and
let's roll
the planet
on, Cody.
And yeah. My goodness. Oh, Biden, you're doing great, yeah, bud. We support
that,
your,
that checks
you're
out.
Doing great.
Yeah, I don't know how we move through this period of time. Maybe it's with Matthew McConaughey platitudes, but I doubt it.
It would be funny if he just fixed everything.
If that was what did it.
Just takes his shirt off and starts talking about, like, carbon capture. Just fucking his way into, like, regenerating forests in order to trap more carbon.
What if we just change the whole fucking system? Like, every month there's some way that everybody... that we vote on major legislation and then our senators or I don't know. I want to have the opportunity to vote for Medicare for all.
It would be
an infrastructure. I want a say on that, you know?
You know, there's elements of that system that I think would be better. There's elements of that system that I think would be worse. Because it's also the level of disinformation is frightening when you consider what if you could freak out enough Americans to like ban a vaccine? Because that week the media cycle there's a lot of really that's why I tend to like when I talk about being an anarchist, I for me, because there's a bunch of things that means it doesn't mean I have like a system that I want people to adopt or I have a suggestion for the way it all could work. It means that when I look at problems in society, the solutions I tend to angle towards are ones that devolve structures of power and hierarchy. Because I think much more often than not, that tends to make problems like better. And when you reduce the power of organizations, the ability of organizations to exert power over individuals, when you reduce the power of groups of people to exert power, when you reduce the hierarchies that exist, you reduce the places that, like, for example, sociopaths can hide and exert damage. You can reduce the damage that a group of angry people can be convinced to do by a media mogul. So that tends to be where I land in terms of, like, what is going to get us out of this? It's devolving power relations. Cause I'm willing to admit that, like, yeah, maybe the solution will be there's a book Garrison and I've been going through for a new series we're talking about that kind of goes over the broadly speaking, what are the possible systems that could develop that would lead to action on climate change. And there's like kind of, they're not positive or negative. They're just different systems. Depending on your attitude, they'd be better. One of them is climate Leviathan is the term they use, which is a massive kind of like a much more effective UN style international organization based around kind of liberal attitudes towards how do you fix this stuff, gas taxes and like restrictions on what people can do. And like a very top down, we have to deal with these problems attitude. There's kind of a more fascist style thing, which is basically like fuck fixing the problem. Let's hoard resources for our block of people and screw everyone else over.
So capitalist there's a more, and also,
yeah,
like,
there's a more, I mean, both the climate Leviathan and that are capitalist.
But I like just, the name climate Leviathan.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing where like some, I'm sure there's people listening to say, yeah, that's what we need. I can't say that wouldn't work because nothing, no one knows what's going to work. That one scares me. It doesn't scare me as much as kind of the more fascist thing. And then there's like the one that what they call climate Mao, which is this idea of like more based around particularly like Asian style socialist mass movement kind of responses to the problem of climate change that are extremely centralized, but in a much less, you know, it's just kind of a different take on sort of the climate Leviathan style. And then you have
I can tell you right now, climate Mao isn't going to go over for most of the world.
Well, no, I mean, but it's like this isn't what people would call it. These are they're kind of trying to categorize.
Being
so this is
cheeky, Robert.
Climate Leviathan is basically the idea of like, okay, if the response is largely organized by the United States and Western kind of bloc nations, this is the kind of thing they would probably try to do based on the current, based on the way NATO works, based on the way the EU works. Climate Mao is kind of assuming, okay, if China is successful in getting a large bloc of countries together, these are the ways in which, based on the ways they're already approaching the problem of climate change, this is the way they would probably try to go for it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's the option, I think they call it option X, which is a much more decentralized and much less and much more based on kind of fundamentally changing the way we order our society, so that you can't have some of these massive overarching international structures that make the kind of damage that we're doing to our climate possible. I don't know. I don't want to like get into this too much because I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. But I've been
reading
a lot about.
Well, and you're doing a whole new show on this.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows what's going to fucking work or what's going to get tried. But anyway.
But I know what's going to happen right now. Mm-hmm. It's another ad.
Yay.
Ad break.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
We are back.
News just dropped that North America has lost 3 billion birds in 50 years.
Jesus.
Is that a lot?
Nah, it's probably fine.
Perfect transition to talking about some more of the climate change disasters we're seeing.
Yay.
Bad, bad news. Anywho, the ocean's on fire in Mexico's
Yucatan Peninsula. A couple of times in the last few days.
Yeah. This one's in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. The fire began, I guess, in an underwater pipeline that connects to a platform at Pemex's Kumalub Zap oil development. Apparently, the fire was due to a gas pipeline rupture and was brought under control using water pumps and hoses for about 5 hours. This is fun. Angel Carrizales, who is the executive director of Mexico's Oil Safety Regulatory Agency, said that the incident did not generate any spill. But experts are saying, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah,
like, okay.
It is funny that they're saying, we're pretty sure there wasn't a spill because it was all on so much fire.
Like, they're saying like the best case scenario is that the fire contains the oil from going too far. But like the fact that the ocean is on fire means that there's shit in the ocean causing it to be on fire that
things
shouldn't
need to
be
flammable for
in the ocean.
Yeah.
This isn't like a Flaming Mo cocktail or whatever.
But you gotta give a shout out to the PR person who was like, wait. It's not a spill because it all burned up. It's all burned
unbelievable.
Up.
Unbelievable.
Problem solved.
Can't call it a spill.
Self-closing loop.
Yeah, this is from CNN? I'm not sure. Simon George, a professor of organic geochemistry at Macquarie University in Australia.
Sounds made up. I don't trust him.
Tells CNET, that for such a dramatic and sustained flame to persist on the ocean, a continuous stream of natural gas must have been making its way to the surface from the leak. That's what's going on there.
I could have guessed that. Even if I wasn't a professor of organic geochemistry.
I could have guessed that, too. And then there was this
I do think looking at the ocean fire, you go, it probably got a lot of shit in the ocean, didn't they?
Yeah, that was my guess. All I saw was the seemingly CGI video of the portal to hell.
Unbelievable.
That opened up in the
ocean. Like, two things that don't belong together, you know? I'm watching My Hero Academia.
Well, you know, we're all individuals.
That's fire
and
ice.
You have fire and you've got water. And I think, you know, we need to think about the collective nature of nature itself and support fires in water.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Some people have noted this, that like in the, what was it? It was like the 60s and 70s. I think it might have started in the 50s. But like the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland lit on fire like so many times. Like that fucking river kept catching on fire. It was like
not
sometimes
good.
The fires would be like, the flames would be like 5 stories tall. Like the river was very flammable. And it was a big reason why the EPA was created. Because Americans at that point, again, talking about like a shared concept of reality, we're all like, oh, it's pretty bad if a river keeps catching on fire. We should probably do something about this.
We should look into this.
But there's also arguments that because of how effective the EPA was cleaning up kind of the cosmetic issues of like littering and stuff, how they were able to pretty things up and reduce the amount of obvious like fuckery, it actually contributed to us not notice or to people being able to ignore climate change because there was less flaming rivers.
That's interesting and true.
Yeah, yeah.
Incidentally, that river caught fire last year.
Oh, the Cuyahoga dig?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Cleveland's back!
Yeah.
Just like America!
We're doing it. We did it.
Joe Biden's doing it all.
That's right. We're burning back better.
Burn back better. Cleveland. Someone needs to do like a Cleveland Chamber of Commerce app.
But speaking about oil, gas, and our previous conversations about infrastructure, regulation, etc. This ExxonMobil story, did you guys read about
it's
this
fun.
Too? This is fun. Just in case you guys don't know, Greenpeace pretended to be interviewing lobbyists, I guess, and got Keith McCoy, who is a senior ExxonMobil lobbyist.
Unaffiliated with ExxonMobil. Whatever he said in that meeting is we don't stand by it. Okay.
They got him on a Zoom interview meeting and recorded him saying all the quiet parts out loud about ExxonMobil and what they've been doing with climate change. Then they released it to Channel 4 News. And I just, before we talk about it, it's just, that was so fucking easy and so fucking dumb. You got duped. So easily.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first thing Greenpeace has done in a while that I thought was pretty fucking based.
Yeah, it's wild. The thing is, though, like, it's wild and like, oh, I can't believe he said all that stuff and they got it so easy. They kind of know that there are no consequences for their actions.
No,
I mean, there are long-term consequences on the planet and their future generations. But like, in terms of them...
It doesn't matter to them.
There's no political will to make any of them pay the price that they ought to pay for this.
Because specifically of what he says.
Speaking of political will.
He lays it out. Okay. I mean, he specifically talks about, you know, how they have lobbied against the climate change measures in Biden's infrastructure bill. How early on they pushed back against climate change by using third parties, and how they, you know, keep senators in their pocket. This right here is it in a nutshell. Mr. McCoy said, when you have an opportunity to talk to a member of Congress, I liken it to fishing, right? You know, you have bait, you throw that bait out and they say, oh, you want to talk about infrastructure? Yeah. And then you start to reel them in and you start to have those conversations about federal leasing programs. You start to have those conversations about carbon tax, you know, it's all these opportunities that you use. And to use the fishing analogy again, you kind of reel them in. I make sure I get them the right information they need so they look good. And then they help me out. They're a captive audience. They know they need you and I need them. There it is. There it is. Yeah. That's why nothing matters. That's why it won't change.
And it's awesome. There's another great point in that that I'm just going to keep reading the quote.
Yeah.
Mr. McCoy appears to suggest that ExxonMobil's public support for a carbon tax is underpinned by the conviction that it will never happen, allowing the company to support it in order to appear green. He said, I will tell you that there is not an appetite for a carbon tax. It is a non-starter. Nobody is going to propose a tax on all Americans. And the cynical side of me says, yeah, we kind of know that. But it gives us a talking point. We can say, well, what is ExxonMobil for? Well, we're for a carbon tax.
So craven.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's green Exxon commercials, BP, diversity, like all the shit they do so that they don't have to address things. And it's just wild to hear.
It's rad.
Say.
I kept thinking reading this article about I went on a little bit of a rabbit hole this weekend reading about Tolkien's views on J.R.R. Tolkien, like the Lord of the Rings guy's views on politics, because he was like he self-identified as an anarchist.
Not Kyle Tolkien. Sorry.
No, not I don't even. Who is that, a real person, Cody?
No, it's just I picked a name.
Okay, thank you. But he talked a bit about there was a line where he was in a letter he wrote to his son where he was talking about like the wonderful trend of people bombing factories and power stations and saying like, I hope it continues, but I also hope that it's seen by a majority of people as patriotic, because if most people don't think it's rad, then it's not going to work. Right. Most people have to agree like, yeah, it's fucking cool to blow up factories and oil pipelines. And they don't right now. And it would be rad if most people looked at somebody damaging oil company infrastructure and went based. But instead they'll go, no, that person should get a 35-year terrorism enhancement on their sentence and die in a cell because they attempted to stop the environment from dying.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What does based mean?
It means like cool, but in cool in a context. Sense of like it's ideologically sound as well. It's used on all sides, but it means like not just like rad, but like rad in a way that is good politics, I guess would be like my best way of describing it.
Correct.
So not like Joogie.
Praxis.
Profound. Yeah.
No.
It's honestly like it's language is so silly. It's like an update. It's like, it's kind of like woke was years ago.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, oh, that your point is aware of this.
This was kind of stolen from fascists, Katie.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you the exact place it started, but it first gained like real currency online among like the alt-right and stuff.
Got it. Okay.
But it's just a fun thing to say. So everybody says based now. It's like pilled.
I'll start trying to use it.
I'm going to work it in.
Mm-hmm.
Do it
very
now.
Effortlessly, clearly.
Do it now.
That's the based choice.
That's the based choice. Yes, best, it's based to use base.
I'm going
to
get better at this.
Well, it's not always based to use base because a lot of that. Anyway, whatever. Let's move on.
It's like Melania says, be based.
Be based.
this is so frustrating. And like, it's the kind of thing, like, you know, there are documents from Exxon decades ago. They knew about it. They denied it. They did their own, quote, science to disprove it. There's a quote, another quote from this fucking guy. Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes. Did we hide our science? Absolutely not. Did we join some of these shadow groups to work against some of the early efforts? Yes, that's true. But there's nothing illegal about it. He says this a lot during the meeting. There's not illegal. It's nothing illegal about it, which maybe if you keep having to say that, maybe that indicates that you're like morally like questionable. Like maybe like you feel like you're ethically doing something bad, but you're justifying it because it's not illegal. I just find it so interesting that, not interesting, just like obvious. We all know that there's no political will to do these things. We all know that. They do too. And they use it to their advantage.
A big part of the reason there's no political will.
Would like to give a shout out to our boy Joe Manchin for making the list, making the top of the list of folks in Congress that Mr. McCoy cited as being very, very helpful to ExxonMobil and their anti-climate
along with cinema
cause, along with cinema, of course. I believe, what was it?
Yeah.
Cinema, your state's on fire.
Yeah, fuck you. I just
Mr. McCoy, fuck them all. I wanted to mention Manchin because McCoy described him as the kingmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
speaks to his office on a weekly basis.
I bet the Joe Kingmaker. Manchin masturbated when he heard that.
Oh yeah, Kingmaker. Yeah,
yeah.
That's how he sounds like, right?
He just came so.
I'm
hard.
Joe Manchin, right?
Yeah. He wishes he had one of those tube things so he could just plug it into the Capitol Hill and it would suck his cum.
Go to the Tesla charging point and just drop off your cum.
His cum, which is the consistency of, you know, that kind of like spongy Ethiopian bread, really tasty stuff. If you were to soak that in buttermilk and then leave it out in, like, park it in a black car in the sun during a heat wave and give it about 8 hours.
So, like, kind of yeasty?
Yeah, yeasty, but, like, very yeasty and mottled and but also, like, thick, like, turgid. Like, a turgid mass of cum. That's Joe Manchin's semen.
I can't believe the person I've become in the year and a half of recording this show with you guys that I don't even flinch at this.
What I thought was funny is when you said become, Cody laughed. And I saw it. You can't undo that.
Boy.
Listen here. Look. I can explain.
Is that it for us today? Is that the note we leave this on?
Let's end on a happy note and talk about Patriot Front showing up in Philly.
That's fun. That's nice, fun.
Every now and then we get to get a nice story too, right?
Instead of become, which is honey.
So these, right, yeah, it is. You are eating cum when you put honey in your tea.
That's right.
And if you're a cop and you're getting your tea from a restaurant, there's actual cum in
there.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. They put bee cum in there, but also human cum. Yeah.
The cum in your coffee is the least of your concerns.
Exactly.
All right. Tell us about
fascists embarrassed themselves.
They sure did.
They just can't stop. They love being
can't
silly.
Can't stop, won't stop.
So there's this group, Patriot Front, which is like, they're Nazis. There's, they will, the thing that they've started doing is, because Charlottesville, some of these, like, especially some of their, like, organizational folks were at, you know, 2017, Unite the Right in Charlottesville, and that didn't end well in the long run for them. Yeah. But they want to keep doing stuff. So they, like,
should've
they put up stickers
on,
all
guys.
Over the place that are, like, not stolen, conquered, about, like, in, you know, indigenous lands and stuff. And they'll, you know, they try to pill Americans with stuff that's very fashy, but not Nazi explicitly. Like, that's kind of their thing. They're not going to wave a swastika, but they're doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it's like fashy, like Western chauvinism, kind of obfuscating like what they're saying.
Harder in the fascism than the Proud Boys, which is why they're not as big. But one of the things they've been doing lately is they've been organizing these things that kind of seem like flash demonstrations, but aren't, where they'll bus everyone that they can get into a city and do like a march that they won't, there won't be any PR ahead of time. So suddenly just like 100 of these dudes with shields and banners and masks all dressed the same will be marching through. And sometimes they'll throw off smoke bombs to make it look eerie. We'll like march through DC or something. They decided to do that in Philly, and none of them were from Philly, as best as we could tell. Philadelphia, famously, you know, so you know about Philadelphia. When the Eagles won the Super Bowl, because it was a chance that the Eagles would win, prior to the game concluding, the police put lube on all of the light traffic lights and like street lights and stuff in a huge chunk of the city. Because something that Philadelphians do whenever a good or a bad thing happens is just spontaneously take to the streets to tear down all of the light poles. Because that's just how Philly likes to play.
It's in the bylaws. They got it. Like, what's, I don't see the problem.
When we are angry,
all of that
we will
lube
remove.
Was useless, because within like an hour of the game ending, the cops had retreated. They just left where the crowd was, because they're like, there's no controlling these people. There is nothing we can do to handle this crowd. And people, sure enough, found a way through sheer mass of people to tear down a bunch of light poles. Like, that's what Philly does on a good day when they're happy.
I mean, that's a story of resilience.
It's called America.
Philly got angry. And like, but when I say Philly, like four or five dudes, because this was a flash thing, right? There was no time for
a counter-protest. It's not like, like the city didn't descend on them. It was like five people from Philly, like, just, wait, fuck this.
It was just like four or five guys who happened to be hanging out on July 3rd and realized, like, those guys are fucking Nazis, and just started pummeling them, throwing shit. And they broke and ran. And ran back to the fucking rider truck that they were all driving in. And they got caught by the cops because they were all illegally riding in the back of a box truck. And then they had to, like, sit down on the ground and get photographed while the cops, like, sighted them.
So good.
It was pathetic. Extremely funny.
Satisfying.
What a fun note.
It was very, very funny. Nobody was arrested because no crimes were committed.
Right, they were just like...
Even the cops were like, it kind of seems like you shouldn't have been in Philly, huh?
Oh, that's a heartwarming tale.
God, I love Philly.
Great, great, great.
Probably will never go there again, but I appreciate their chutzpah.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that light note and to this episode. Mm-hmm. I hope you enjoyed the whole dang thing. You know, that's what we're here for.
That's
especially
right.
Talking about Joe Manchin. You know what? If you're an artist, if you're a graphic designer, right? If you're, I don't know, if Darren Aronofsky's listening, film Joe Manchin's Come, you know? Mm-hmm. You can make your own. We gave you the recipe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just make it
right
happen,
there.
People. It's right
like
there.
Like a sourdough starter.
I feel like it's going to be like Cronenbergarian kind of.
Yeah, Cronenberg would be the right guy to direct Joe Manchin's Come, a 90-minute movie starring
Kurt Russell.
It's a
winner.
Kurt Russell back too.
Yeah,
because he's the right guy to confront such a monster. If there's one thing I know about Kurt Russell,
will he be willing to dive into it and explode it from the inside?
Yeah, he would. He's the only hero who can save us from the
you guys are losing
that
me.
Joe Manchin scene.
You're losing me.
All right, well,
bye.
Bye.
Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes,
Daniel.
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.